Welcome to Fusion, a podcast for Relay FM members where I talk to hosts from various shows about a single topic. My name is Stephen Hackett, and this month I'm joined by Dan Morin and Shelley Brisbane to talk about WWDC 21. Hey Dan, how are you?
I'm doing well, Stephen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and Shelley, how are things in Texas?
Hi, Stephen. Things are warm here, but other than that, pretty good.
I got some of that going on.
Right?
Yeah. It's summer. It's here. We're recording this a week after the end of WWDC. I don't know about y'all, but I need some time to sort of digest and think about what happened. I know we're all really busy the week of kind of covering the news, but now we've had some time to think about it, and I'm really curious to hear y'all's takeaways from Apple's conference this year. Shelley, was there anything like a theme that really struck you, or do you think this was sort of a just piecemeal type event?
I feel like there were not overarching themes. I think there were a lot of cool new things that were in sort of silos of their own, and then there were other things where there were updates that were probably a little long overdue. So I was overall happy with it, but I can't say that I came away with a giant theme, even though there were things, you know, that I really liked and was happy about.
I'll steal this from Jason Snell because he's a smart guy, and we like to steal from the best. I think Jason caught a very interesting thing, which is that this seems like the year that Apple decided to line up its platforms a little bit better, right? You know, everybody had been worried about this idea, this sort of vague idea that the platforms would merge, right? Like the macOS and iPadOS, and it all become the same thing. And I think Apple has resisted that. But what I think is smart about what they're doing is, so often in the past, we've had features roll out and then come to another platform later or not at all. And this year, everything they announced was pretty much across the board. So if there was a new feature available, it was on the phone, it was on the iPad, it was on the Mac, right? And I think that's a big deal because it shows a commitment to all of these platforms. I'm going to leave tvOS out for a second. But it shows a commitment to all these platforms as things that Apple is really invested in. And I think that is good because it means that there is a future and a life for all of those platforms, and that Apple realizes that different people have different things that they want to do and different devices they want to use, and that's okay. We can use our Macs, we can use our iPads if you want to use one over the other, but that the features will span the entire ecosystem, and you know, that's their strength. They have that ability to do it.
It's funny because it felt like during the keynote when they were rolling things out, they started out with iOS and they moved on to other things that are not sort of OS specific but focused on platforms, for example Home, and I felt in the moment, they don't really know how to arrange this in a way that talks about it from the point of view of platforms. But I think that's the point, is that they're less focused on, okay, this is an iOS thing versus this is a Mac thing, even though there were some of those things. And there are a lot of cases in which you went away thinking, okay, is this just a Mac thing or is it an iOS thing? And then when you learned more about it, in most cases, it was spanning platforms.
Yeah, I found that really interesting, especially as someone who is pretty Mac-centric. Like, it was cool to see the Mac get all the same stuff.
Yeah, right.
The other devices get. I do wonder, though, if at some point the way they structure these announcements kind of has to change, if it is more about ecosystem stuff, because they were announcing things like in the iPad section and then later it's like, oh, it's also here and here. They're still very like OS and product focus in the way they lay these things out. I don't know how you change that necessarily, but I'm very curious to watch that moving forward.
It's like a vertical integration versus a horizontal integration sort of thing. Like, maybe in the future they're just talking about like, these are the great new features that are coming to our platforms this year, and we'll talk about the features and maybe bounce back and forth between showing you how they work on different devices. I suppose they could always do that. But yeah, it is present a challenge for them when it's not so much like your hardware, right, makes it easy to delineate. We've got this new Mac, we've got this new iPhone, we've got this new iPad. But when you're talking about your software platform stuff going forward, and they are much more unified than they were in the past, I think it, you're right. It requires some restructuring of how they think about it.
Well, two things that will probably give them an opportunity to change up if they want to, are next year we're much more likely to have an in-person WWDC, which feels like an opportunity to me because I sometimes get a little weary of the WWDC keynote format, even at the way it's changed in virtual contexts. But also, this year they didn't feel constrained by needing to talk to developers, which if I were a developer, I'm not sure how I would feel about that. But there really was a very much broad audience focus in most parts of WWDC. Keynote, interestingly enough, when I went to listen to the Platform State of the Union, it was the reverse, and it was much more focused on developers even than Platform State of the Unions I've listened to in the past. And I felt like that was there's such an awareness that the WWDC keynote, especially in the absence of things like trade shows and other opportunities that are not focused on hardware, the WWDC keynote is really kind of their big event of the year to roll new things out and new directions out. And they've just decided, okay, we don't have to say developers, developers, developers 37 times in the keynote.
Reference acknowledged.
Wait, did somebody say that?
Somewhere mm-hmm. in technology past.
Yep.
One feature or update across the platform that has garnered a lot of attention since DubDub has wound down is the design of Safari 15, where the tab and location bar are kind of all the same thing. The browser will take on specific colors depending on the website. I saw today that you can actually have the colors rotate like they do in the six colors navigation. So yeah, I sent that to Jason and told him.
Oh, we all sent it to him? Is that what happened?
Yeah. I told him that I'm going to use Chrome to visit his website if he does that. I don't know if y'all have had any time with the betas. I've had a little bit. But do you have any thoughts on this change? Do you think it's going to stick? What are some of the pros and cons? Shelley, what about you?
I haven't used it, so I hesitate to get in the weeds too much with it, but I am skeptical of it, as I often am of highly design-focused interface changes. In other words, if you're doing something to be bold in terms of design, my first thought is, what's that experience going to be like for me as a web user and specifically somebody who cares about visual accessibility? And the answer that is often given in those cases is, well, there'll be a setting for you. And that's not always the case. And in fact, I don't use Safari, not for those reasons. But for me personally, it's not that big a deal. But I do have a concern that these feel like changes that are being made for no particular reason other than design aesthetics. And I kind of don't get it. But at the same time, as I say, I haven't used it myself. So I'm kind of holding my fire a little bit.
Yeah, I've used it on the iPad mainly so far. And I would argue it maybe works a little better on the iPad than it does on the Mac, perhaps. But, you know, the Mac is such a big jump, such a big change for what we had before. And I think that the big issue that Apple is running into and their potential pitfall here is also just the fact that Apple, while a big player, obviously huge installed base of all of its devices, and that means Safari tends to just inherit a large slice of users because it's the default on all of its devices. But Apple's still trying to wield that a little bit like a bully pulpit. Like, you know, they're going out there in their design sessions and talking about how you should redesign your site to put your page names first so it'll fit when the tabs are truncated, and how you should make sure to use tags so that the location bar, which is now on the bottom in the iPhone, doesn't float over any of your access elements. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, it's kind of a big ask. I mean, they've worked hard to make those options easily available, but it still requires proactive work on the part of a bunch of web designers. And, you know, if there's anything that web designers love, it's having to design for specific browsers and specific devices. I mean,
that's a no.
Yeah, I haven't been a web designer in about 20 years other than very casually. And even at that time, back in the day, you know, trying to figure out what would work in Internet Explorer versus what would work in Firefox was a huge pain. And I cannot imagine there are a lot of developers jumping over themselves to think, great, I've got to rewrite all my sites now. You know what, Apple? Shove it, right? Like, that's my worry, is that there's going to be a lot of cases where web developers and designers are just like, I don't want to do the extra work. And you know what? Tough. Like, sorry, Apple users, you're on your own and just deal with it.
Yeah, I do worry about that too, that especially on big sites, they're just not going to bother. I mean, yeah, like, Jason and I and you know, a bunch of other people.
Sure.
It, like, you know, we'll do that work. But I mean, look how many mainstream websites don't have dark modes. And dark mode is not just iOS and macOS. It's everywhere.
Well, speaking as somebody who runs a site that is not in any way connected to Apple or technology and who obviously has to address all kinds of browsers, and for our concern, I'm running it, talking about a site I run for the radio show where I work, is our concern is mostly mobile responsiveness and the ability to create pages that look nice in multiple environments, but we're not thinking in terms of and don't want to think in terms of the persnickety desires of a specific browser. Now, Safari for iOS is probably the browser we would pay most attention to in that context because the browsers used by Android phones are a little more likely to be different. You might choose Chrome, you might choose Firefox, but on iOS specifically, a higher percentage of people are going to be using Safari. On the Mac, certainly it's the default, but I think a lot more people will make choices about the browsers they use on desktop platforms than they will on mobile platforms. And responsiveness and compatibility with phones as a web browser, as a web designer, or even just a website maintainer is a big enough problem already without having to layer this on top.
Right. I mean, when your bank makes their site work with it, then you know you've gotten everybody, yeah. Right? Like, that's the last holdout.
Another thing that I thought was interesting this year at WWDC was the real emphasis on doing things together apart, right? Which feels like a very year late type feature. So we have Shared With You, we have Share Play, where you're FaceTiming somebody while watching content or listening to content together, and several other things that kind of go into this. Do y'all think these features were made with COVID-19 in mind? And if so, does it matter, like, as much as it would have if this had come out a year ago?
If it had come out a year ago, I think we'd all be lauding them as visionaries and psychics, because I think they would have had to work very hard. It would have been great. I think everybody agrees those features would have been invaluable. I'm just not sure that it was feasible based on the timing of everything that happened. That said, you know, there are certainly a lot of places throughout the world where the pandemic is still going on and will continue going on for a while. And so obviously in those places, these features, I think, will still be big. I think there's still some holdover. There will be a lot of people who are more used to doing things remotely now, and they can take advantage of these features. But I also think there's something else going on here, which is this is sort of, I kind of think of it as an expansion of the old blue bubble, green bubble system, right? These are things where Apple builds in stuff that works throughout not just its ecosystem, but stuff that, you know, when all your family and friends are all using Apple devices, it's like, oh, now we have all these other things that we can do together because we're all on Apple devices. Or let me highlight all these links from all my friends also on Apple devices that link into other parts of the ecosystem. So it's a reminder that Apple's play is long, and it's about not just individual devices or software platforms, but about the whole experience of using Apple products. And I think that's one reason it continues to try to build in very compelling technologies and APIs that, you know, keep people sort of connected to each other. And moreover, it keeps that whole thing alive where it's like, well, if you were also on an Apple device, this would be really easy. Maybe you should think about switching. So I think it's all stuff that works in their favor. And it's sort of a multi-pronged approach that it's very clever.
I think that it definitely is. It feels like it's too late. I think Dan's right, though. There's no way they could have had it ready for mid-2020, much less even late 2020. But they have some opportunity to leverage their Appleness, especially in terms of FaceTime, because we've all used Zoom or Teams or WebEx or something like that to do remote communication. But these systems are not without glitchiness. And when Apple stuff works, it just works. And more to the point, your family Zoom call doesn't have to have a tech administrator to set it up and make it run. If your family video call, I should say, if it's running with FaceTime and FaceTime is behaving itself. I think the SharePlay thing is specifically interesting because it does what Dan is talking about, where it kind of encourages you to get on the train and have an Apple device so that you can watch the same content together in a way that is more compelling to an individual who wants to be part of a group even than the FaceTime thing is. Because FaceTime, of course, we now have the ability to communicate via the web if you're not on an Apple platform. But the SharePlay thing feels like that's in your feels. That's not that's not just, okay, we need a practical way to have video conferences, and we can do that with Zoom if we have to. But SharePlay, you run the risk of being left out if your buddies or your friends or your family are going to sit around and watch a movie together on Friday night. And a lot of those systems that already exist don't actually work that well in practice. I know Plex has one and Netflix has one. There are several others. And just anecdotally, I've not used them very much, but the people I talk to who have really mixed results. And so again, if Apple can make SharePlay work, and also, by the way, I have some concerns about how app developers are going to use those APIs to make apps that work well within the SharePlay context, and also, by the way, again, accessibly, because that's not a guarantee. I think SharePlay could be a really fun way for people to connect together and post-pandemic. And as Dan says, we're more used to thinking about things remotely, and there are ways to do fun things remotely that we might not have chosen to do before. So even though it's late, I think they have a possibility to make some inroads there.
The last thing I want to touch on is hardware. It was believed, or I guess rumored, that the sort of the next step up from the M1, that we may be seeing that, let's call it the M1X for sake of conversation. You know, maybe that being a Mac Mini or a higher end MacBook Pro. And we didn't see that. It was an all software show, which is not uncommon, but definitely people, I think, were a little surprised when it got to the end. There weren't new MacBook Pros. Do you still think that's imminent? And is there something you're looking forward to seeing as Apple Silicon continues to roll out?
I think they're still coming. I mean, if there is anything that the previous M1 launches have showed us, is that there's a lot of headroom there. And Apple has been attacking this in a very logical fashion, working from sort of the bottom up in terms of how it addresses its transition for its hardware. I would not at all be surprised to learn that the reason that there was no Mac hardware at WWDC was simply this ongoing supply chain issues. I think that's extremely likely based on what we know about what's going on there. That said, without knowing too much about when those issues get ironed out, it's unclear when we would be likely to see these MacBook Pros. I think they could be as early as, I would not wager against a surprise event sometime in the summer, which would be unusual, but it would not be out of the question if really all that's holding them back is the supply chain, because they don't want to, you know, if it turns out to be ready in July, they don't want to sit on it till October, you know, when they feel like they have a good time, because that's just like ticking away there. So I'm expecting to see some MacBook Pro updates probably no later than September is my general thought. And I'm also hopeful that that means a larger iMac might be in the offing as well, and perhaps even, you know, sort of the higher end Mac Mini. I think all those things have a logical progression. There's like, you can sort of see the pathways to them. And I think that Apple would love to get its transition done in short order to not have to worry about selling Intel Macs anymore as much as it can.
I think what Dan says about supply chain makes total sense. I also think people always focus on holiday quarters in terms of sales. You know, you're going to buy something for Christmas or for an end of year gift. But don't forget back to school. And now we have back to work. There is a lot of opportunity for Apple to sell stuff to people who are going to be in different environments than they were before. And it would be really a great opportunity for them to be able to sell MacBook Pros to all the kids that are going to college, or to sell iPads to those people who are going to back to work or to school, and to be able to have to say to them, okay, well, you're stuck with the one from last year or that has last year's design, even if it has an M1. That just feels like a missed opportunity. And don't forget that in September, October timeframe, we're looking at new phones, and I think they would like the opportunity to differentiate out those sets of announcements so that you don't have one fall announcement, or maybe two, because I know sometimes they'll do phones first and then they'll do iPads a little bit later. But it seems like if they can, it would be logical for them to do, say, a late summer announcement for computers of some kind and then be able to do phones in the fall.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, especially if there's a lot of Mac stuff coming, if it really is three more models. And it's like, that's an event of itself just based on time, let alone attention, to your point. I think that's super smart. Well, so we're at the end of sort of this cycle, and looking forward, you know, we'll have new phone season here pretty soon. And of course, developers will be cranking away on applications on these betas. And I'm curious how the two of y'all look at betas as something that you normally run. I, for one, generally wait until the public beta, although currently I have iOS or iPadOS 15 and Monterey running on secondary machines. I jumped in a little early this year, but how do y'all handle beta season?
I always do betas for iOS or iPadOS, depending on what device I have around, early, because I'm starting to work on my iOS accessibility book, so I want that beta as quick as I can. It's on a secondary device, and the beta has been really good this year. I've had the iPadOS 15 beta on an iPad, and it's humming along. I haven't put it on my phone yet, but I always wait for macOS. I guess for one thing, I don't have a practical reason. As much fun as it would be to play with it, I'm not trying to write about it. My main concern with macOS is usually interface changes, like this whole Safari thing, but I probably am going to wait. There's sort of a little dream in my heart. I'm thinking about getting one of those new iMacs, but I haven't decided to pull the trigger yet. And I was kind of waiting till after DubDub to see whether there was anything else I might be tempted by. And now I'm just confused because I don't know what to buy.
Yeah, I am always the one who's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to wait. I'm going to take it easy. I'm not going to put... And then I totally, totally lose my cool. I installed the iPadOS beta this week on my only iPad because of all the devices I have, the iPad tends to be the one that's the most expendable. I don't worry too much about if it goes out of commission or something isn't reliable. I have plenty of other devices I can use, especially because I tend to be around the house these days. Normally, then, I would have also installed the macOS beta or started to think about doing that on my laptop. The reason I'm not doing that this year is I do know I have some travel lined up, and I will probably have to record some podcasts during that trip, so I want to make sure that I have something that's kind of bulletproof and reliable for that, at least. And since that's sort of early July for me, then probably when I come back from that, I will assume around then the public beta will drop, and then I will probably go for that. I usually do the public beta, but I suckered a developer friend into setting me up with an iPadOS beta this year. So I'll start with that. And then the phone's the last thing to go because it's so critical, right? For most of us, like, I don't want to have to worry about my phone going out. But, you know, by the time the public beta's had a couple versions on it and it seems stable, I'll probably dive in. And then the iMac is the last thing because that's like my production machine. So that oftentimes doesn't get updated until like the final release rolls around. So yeah, I always have something that I can fall back to just in case of emergency.
Cool. Well, I appreciate y'all joining me today. Folks, if you're out there and you're not listening to Dan and Shelley's shows, I don't know what you're doing with your life, but you need to get parallel and clockwise into your podcast player. I appreciate y'all coming on. And any closing thoughts?
It's still a big year. A lot of stuff felt quiet at first, but I think there's a lot of stuff under the surface, and there's a lot of stuff that we're going to see once developers start taking advantage of it, and that's what I'm really excited about. It's always fun to see what clever things developers come up with all of Apple's announcements, and it'll probably be a couple months before we start getting the floodgates open on that.
Yeah, it really did feel, both pre-WWDC and as the course of the week went on, and even afterwards, there's a lot of wait, there's more, and even though there are small things that are coming out and things that you're learning about that you didn't know from the keynote or whatever sessions you went to, it's still kind of fun to find little nuggets, and all of them have been good so far.
Cool. Thank you so much. Members, thank you so much for your support. If you ever have any questions, you get in touch. membership@relay.fm. If you're not in the Discord, I would recommend jumping in there. It's a really fun community where we talk about this stuff seemingly around the clock. There's always somebody awake in the Relay FM Discord. It's like the sun never sets on some empire. I can't remember which. Anyways, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, y'all say bye.
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 Bye, y'all.